which state politicians or other public officials are telling us the truth and which ones are not. Wisconsin's PolitiFact continues to put claims to the test and rates them on a truthometer. And we'll find out this hour which recent claims were deemed to be true or which politicians earned a pants-on-fire rating. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, December the 24th. Good to have you with us on this Christmas Eve morning. Was there a recent claim from a state official that you thought was over the top or that you questioned when we heard some of these debates or issues recently on the train, on public employees, on voter fraud? What issue do you wonder about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Perhaps PolitiFact has rated the claim, or perhaps it will. We'll find out. Our guest is Greg Borowski, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin. He also is senior editor for projects and investigations for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us again. So we've talked about this before, but exactly how do you evaluate a claim and rate it?
Well, we take a claim, and the first thing we have when we look at it is it has to be a factual one that has to be able to be evaluated fairly on our scale. So we don't take a statement of opinion. So someone says, you know, taxes are too high, that's their opinion. We can't really evaluate it. And we don't take prospective things. If someone says, I will never raise taxes, we can't fairly evaluate that. But if they say, you know, I cut taxes and it created 50,000 jobs, well, we can go back and look at the record on something like that.
So you're not giving up after the elections. You're going to keep this up.
No, yeah, we continued after the elections through the sort of the lame duck session of the legislature and in Washington. We'll continue this into the new year. We just hit on Thursday our 100th item. We launched on Labor Day, and our 100th one was yesterday, and we'll continue forging ahead.
Oh, really? Wow, that is a lot. In fact, I read here that you're going to launch a walker meter or something like that?
Right, yeah. Starting on January 2nd, we're following in the approach that the National PolitiFact site has, and they did an obometer, which they took, in their case, 500-plus promises that Barack Obama made when he was a candidate running for office, and listed them all out, cited where they came from, and then has been monitoring whether he's made progress on them, whether he's succeeded, if they've stalled or failed. And we look through all the things that Scott Walker said during the campaign, and we'll be creating our own walk-a-meter. It's important. We've got some criticism from people already. You know, why are you picking on Scott Walker? And the reason is, well, he won. We were going to do a Barrett-a-meter if he won, and a Walker-meter if he won, and I think it's important for people to see what a candidate does when he's in office, and this is a good way to do it.
Let me right away pose this comment on Facebook to you, because it talks a little bit more about your process. Patrick on Facebook writes, there seems to be some inconsistency with PolitiFact's process to decide what is truthful and what is not. One person can exaggerate by a small percentage and be called a liar, while another can stretch several points and be called truthful. What's your response to that, and a little bit more on the process on how you determine if something is pants on fire or the truth?
Sure. Well, first, we have a scale that we've published in the paper before and is available on our website, politifactwisconsin.com, which takes the six ratings and has a very specific definition for each. So true is the statement is accurate and there's nothing significant missing. In the middle, half true is the statement is accurate but leaves out important details or takes things out of context, and you get down to false. It's not accurate and pants on fire. The statement is not accurate and makes a ridiculous claim. In terms of the criticism, I'd have to kind of know what items he's talking about. We take a look at each item and go through the scale and see where it falls. It's not a decision made by a single person over here. The reporter who writes it puts a recommendation on it, but then a panel of three editors looks at it and tries to balance out a whole lot of things. They take a look at where that statement should fall, how we've handled other statements that may be similar, and then we put the rating on it and we move forward. There's if there are some particular ones that he is questioning, we'd be happy to send us an email, or I would take a look at them.
Mm-hmm. And you are looking at, correct me if I'm wrong, you're looking at statements made by Wisconsin elected officials or other public officials, and not
right.
just from the state of Wisconsin.
Right, yeah, we're focusing on statements by and about Wisconsin officials. So we had one last week. It was Senator John McCain from Arizona made the statement, but he was talking about earmarks in a federal budget bill for Wisconsin, and it turned out that those were put in, the one he talked about for potato pest management was put in by Congressman Dave Obey. So we felt like that's an important one for our readers, even though he isn't a state politician. And we do look at other public figures, people in the debate. You know, we did one last week on Talgo Incorporated, which made some statements regarding the Madison to Milwaukee train and what the Milwaukee business community did to support them. So we looked at that. We felt that was a good political discussion. And I mean, they're not obviously a candidate. They're a corporate entity.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about some of your recent ratings, including since you brought up John McCain's statement. Let me play from, I believe, the Senate floor, what John McCain said recently.
6,488 earmarks totaling nearly $8.3 billion. Here's a small sample. $277,000 for potato pest management in Wisconsin.
So was he telling the truth or not there?
He was. We looked at that one, and it was a pretty easy one to get at. We thought it was interesting because it provided a window on who from Wisconsin was requesting something like that, and is potato pest management really a significant problem here? And we looked at the record, and Congressman Obey put in a $300,000 request for it. It was later whittled down to the $277,000. It's a request he's made numerous times in recent years. Ultimately, that bill did not pass. They tabled it in Washington, partly for some of the reasons that Senator McCain was citing, but we found that to be true.
As for the Talgo claim and its accuracy?
Yeah, that was one where we were trying to catch up on. There's so many statements and allegations flying back and forth on that one that we were just trying to close the loop on some of them. And the company said that in a letter a day or so after the federal government pulled the train money from Wisconsin and sent it to other states, the company was complaining that the Milwaukee business community did not speak out about the facts and in support of their effort. And we looked at that. They were aiming that primarily at the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. We talked to them, and in fact, they didn't really speak out. And the reason they gave was that they took a step of surveying all their membership about the high-speed rail link, and it was right down the middle. So they felt like there was nothing they could do in terms of taking an advocacy position because their own members were so divided. So that was another one that we rated true.
When it comes to the train, you also rated a claim by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin saying that Scott Walker killed 13,000 jobs in Wisconsin by opposing high-speed rail. You said that one was a pants on fire.
Right. That statement, we dug into the numbers, and it was based on a study that an outside group did. The name of that group is escaping me at the moment, but they looked at construction jobs related to the train. And the way they calculated it is they looked at in a given year, looking forward for the next few years, they said, well, in the first year they needed 200 jobs, and the next year grew to 800 jobs and then to 5,000 jobs and so forth. And what they did was, what the Democrats did to get to the 13,000 was they added all those together. Now, the problem with that is that some of those jobs are continuing. It's not like if you, on December 31st of one year, you get fired and that job goes away and a new job is created on January 1st of the following year. So it was a case where even as what happens in this group's projection was that the jobs would sort of ramp up, hit a high point of 5,535 in year three, and then start to taper off. So that in terms of adding them all together, you could have a situation toward the end where you'd be adding the Democrats would say you'd be adding jobs even as the, as they're fading away. So the group eventually backed off of its own statement. It was the Wisconsin, what do they call it, WISPIRG,
the public interest group,
research group. And they backed off, and they're now using the phrase just thousands of jobs. At their high point, they give about 5,500 jobs. So the 13,000 was way off, and we felt like we gave it a pants on fire because it had been debunked and withdrawn by the group that put it out there in the first place, and they revised it down to a much lower number, yet the party continued to expound and tout that much higher number. So we felt like that was a pants on fire because it was kind of just beyond something that was just simply not accurate.
Greg Borowski is our guest. He is editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin, senior editor for projects and investigations for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we are talking about some of the post-election claims made by Wisconsin politicians and other public officials and figuring out whether they were telling the truth or not. And we're welcoming your questions and reactions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Was there a claim from a Wisconsin politician that you thought was over the top, or one that made you scratch your head a little bit? Maybe PolitiFact has looked into it, and we can ask our guest about it, or maybe PolitiFact will look into it. It's going to be a mostly cloudy day today, a chance of snow, most of it in far southwest Wisconsin this afternoon. Highs today in the mid to upper 20s. Tomorrow, Christmas Day, it's going to be a cloudy day statewide. There is a chance of some lake effect snow. Highs tomorrow in the 20s and low 30s. And then on Sunday, if you're traveling, you'll be happy to know, partly to mostly cloudy with highs in the teens and 20s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 8 this morning, it's the Week in Review. We will welcome in two guests from different perspectives to discuss with you, maybe debate with you, the news of the week, including all the legislation passed by the lame duck session of Congress. So that's coming up in our Week in Review after 8 o'clock. Right now we are talking about whose pants are on fire and whose are not, with Greg Borowski, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your questions and the claims you would like to discuss at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. To the phones we go. Leroy in Racine is with us first. Hi, Leroy.
Good morning to both of you, and happy holidays. I guess my question is more of a general question, which is, what does it matter what the facts really are when people are acting more on what they believe, whether it's truthful or not? The belief that President Obama is Kenyan, the belief that the Bush tax cuts have created all sorts of jobs, and I'm sure people on the opposite side of the political spectrum from me would have equally bizarre comments towards my side of the spectrum.
Interesting point. You have a reaction, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, our view is that it's very important to provide some context for all the statements that are being made out there. I think, I've been in the media business and newspaper business for a long time, and what's happened in recent years, when there is so much information so readily available, whether it's through, chain emails, whether it's stuff you're hearing on the radio, things you're picking up on different websites or blogs on the internet, there's just so much. In a way, it gets to be kind of noise out there. There's so much information, it's sometimes hard to sort through it and say, well, where did that came from? What's the background? What's the perspective on it? So we think, as we go through a statement and rate it, that in my view anyways, it's almost more important. The final rating isn't the most important thing. The most important thing is to read that information and learn the context about it, because our reporters are going to go through the data. They're going to seek independent sources, groups that don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak, and really try to lay out what the context is. And if you read it and disagree with us, that's great. If you read it and agree with us, that's great. But read it, I think, and you'll find that you learn a lot more about the issue, which is, that can only be a positive thing for the discussion.
The 100th Truthometer or a PolitiFact statement that I think was this the one that was in the paper yesterday?
Correct.
So that was that we continue to see isolated incidents of people trying to vote 5-6 times a day made by State Senator Scott Fitzgerald?
Right. This was a statement he made to the Green Bay Press Gazette, to their editorial board, I believe, and it was quoted in one of their editorials. And it was in the context of the idea that Republicans, when they take control of the legislature in January, one of their first priorities is going to be to pass a photo ID bill, which has been talked about for years, of course, and stalled and blocked when Governor Doyle had the ability to do so. So we decided to look at that. That's one of those statements that you hear it and you kind of go, huh, I wonder if that's true. And that's really our first criteria as we pick statements. Is it something that people would wonder about? And as we always do, we started with the senator's office, and they sort of immediately said, well, you know, we can't cite a specific case here in Wisconsin. They said maybe there's some in other states where you'd get to that 5 or 6 times of voting, and they pointed us to Oregon and Alabama, but those cases have not been proved yet. They turned to a 2000 case in the 2000 presidential election. There, if you remember, there are some Marquette University students, you know, one who claimed he voted 4 times. The DA's office here in Milwaukee looked at that and determined it had not occurred. It was just kind of bragging to the campus newspaper. And they looked at a whole host of things, and none of them showed where there were 5 or 6 cases of single people voting. There have been many cases, well, I mean, I shouldn't say many, there have been cases around the state of people caught or accused of double voting. We couldn't find a single one of quintuple or sextuple voting, so we rated that as a false.
And some might say, why not pants on fire?
Well, I think in the way it was stated, what we came down to was that, as an example, I think of a comparison, we did one that was a pants on fire recently from Congressman Kagan, which we could certainly talk about, where his statement was about how the mayor of Green Bay is having ribbon cutting after ribbon cutting for economic development around a new veterans center up in Green Bay. And it turned out that center itself hasn't even broken ground, let alone any related development. And in the way that statement was put out, it was like, gosh, this is happening all the time. It's incredibly, you know, that this is ribbon cutting after ribbon cutting. Mm-hmm. We felt like that was over the top versus, you know, the way Senator Fitzgerald phrased it, it was that these are isolated incidents. Mm-hmm. And that you could very easily have taken that statement and said, this is happening all the time. And that's probably certainly would have put it to the pants on fire, but he was stating it as a limited set of occurrences. And that's where we kind of looked at as we put the rating on it, but it was certainly a close one.
Paul in La Crosse is with us. Hello, Paul.
Yes. Recently you rated a statement by Senator Cole that said he was always a physical hawk. And you said, okay, he's conservative guy, but he has voted for the following. He listed a bunch of bills. And what I disagree with was one of your choices, which was the TARP fund. Since that costs approximately $700 billion going in, and it's going to end up costing us between $25 and $50 billion when all the money comes back to us, you know, that to me is not a sign of fiscal irresponsibility. I mean, what spending bills can a politician vote for and still be a physical hawk, or are they mutually exclusive?
Well, what we did on that statement, and let me read it for readers so they get the context of it. This was earlier this month on December 3rd, the same day the President's Debt Commission agreed on its recommendations for long-term budget fixes. He put out a statement that generally praised the work of that group. And he's, as part of that, he said, I have always been focused on reining in the deficit. And that was one of those that struck us as, if you just think of our senators and what they're kind of known for, we thought, well, voters may hear that and go, well, is that what Senator Cole's known for? Let's look at that part of his record. And we started with his office, and they gave us a whole list of I guess probably maybe a dozen or so votes that were, you know, sort of ones that would be on the rein in spending side. But we thought you can't just look at votes on one side of the record. There are so many votes out there, and we looked at a host of others on the other side. We listed various votes that had big price tags, including the stimulus money, federal health care reforms, the TARP program you referenced, the first President Bush's tax cuts, second President Bush's tax cuts. And it just said, look, we didn't evaluate whether those were good, bad, and different in terms of on a policy point. We just said, look, when you add those up and you look at a host of other ratings and things, it's a much, much more mixed picture than the senator is providing. And he certainly has not, in any of these votes that he presented, he wasn't a leader on them in driving for the reduction of the deficit. These were votes that he voted on as a matter of course as a member of the Senate. So we came down on that one and felt it was that his statement was barely true.
So barely true. And again, something can be true, barely true. What are the ratings?
True, mostly true, half true, barely true, false, and then pants on fire.
Yeah. We have just a minute before news time, but I just want to get this one in really quickly if we can without Charlie Sykes, a talk show host in the Milwaukee area, said that the University of Wisconsin was going to spend its Rose Bowl money on a junket for politically connected officials. True or false?
We came down pants on fire because the statement was that a vast majority, sort of going to blow most of it on bigwigs such as the governor. The vast majority of it is going to take the team and the band and members that have to be out there. A much smaller percentage would be for the other members like Governor Doyle and the others in the traveling party.
We are talking with Greg Borowski, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin, and talking about some of the recent claims by public officials and politicians in Wisconsin that PolitiFact has put to its truthometer. We are finding out which claims were true and which ones weren't, and we're welcoming more from you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you with us on this Friday, December the 24th. Merry Christmas Eve to you. I hope you have a wonderful holiday weekend planned with your friends and family and loved ones. We are talking some politics during this hour of the program, talking about which politicians or public officials have their pants on fire and which ones are telling us the truth. We are talking about some of the recent claims that were rated by PolitiFact Wisconsin, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on this for our guest. Maybe there's a claim that you wonder about. Maybe PolitiFact rated that, or maybe you've heard what you believe to be a whopper. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Greg Borowski is our guest, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin, senior editor for projects and investigations for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we have provided a link to the PolitiFact website on our website, wpr.org, and on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Greg, will Wisconsin PolitiFact be doing a lie of the year or a pants on fire of the year?
We decided not to do that. The national site did one, and we had some discussions with them, and their idea, I think, is to have one lie of the year that relates to PolitiFact in general, rather than to have each state, you know, do its own and, you know, maybe take away a little bit from the attention on the national one. But they did that last week, and their lie of the year, which just the national editors voted on, was the statement that the health care reform is in Washington is a government takeover of health care.
All right. Let me talk about an issue that really is in the news these days. And indeed, I saw some mention about PolitiFact in the news coverage. This is from Jack Craver on the Daily Page at the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. Recently, PolitiFact Wisconsin rated a comment a union president made about public sector compensation as false. It disputed AFT Wisconsin President Brian Kennedy's assertion that public sector workers make 8% less than their private sector counterparts. I'll go on with his concerns about your rating, but let's talk a little bit about this claim and your rating and take a listen to what Brian Kennedy had to say about that.
If you look across the board, we're averaging about 8% less than if we all worked in the private sector. Some of our people make half or a third as much as they could make if they worked in the private sector.
And you say that that was false.
Yeah, we took a look at, I mean, as we always do, we start with the person making the statement. And when we went to Brian Kennedy on this one, he referred us to, he said, well, I think that this came from some talking points that his staff gave us. And he then sent us to one national study, not a state study, but one that looked nationally at how public and private sector salaries compare. And then he found some additional numbers. There's some in terms of how he was comparing them. There's at various points we were mixing apples and oranges of just pay and then pay and benefits, and we were trying to sort that out as best we can and to find some numbers specific to the state of Wisconsin. So the numbers that came closest were ones he cited to us in a study done by two University of Wisconsin Milwaukee professors. And the study was done for the National Institute of Retirement Security, a board who I would note is largely composed of representatives of public employee pensions and those funds. So there's a particular bent, perhaps, in what that group is providing in the information. But they said that wages in Wisconsin were 6.2% less, you know, for state employees than public employees. Now, that's off. I mean, it seems like a small amount, but it's off by nearly one-fourth or 25% from the figure that was cited. Beyond that, we felt like when you take in this discussion and say we're being paid this much less than the other side, that advancing the argument, you're really only picking one side of the discussion. I've covered politics for years and years, and I often and extensively hear people say whenever someone criticizes the union benefits that people have in terms of pensions and vacations and things, they say, well, look, you have to understand, we negotiated less in salary in order to get these big benefits, or the benefits as they exist. And that seems to be true, that's the system. So we felt like when you take just half of it and say, look, at this point, we want to focus on the pay and say our pay is low, that we felt like you have to include the other side of the coin and say that and recognize that the benefits are high, that it's an entire package that is what your compensation is. And we rated that claim on the 8% less as a false.
Yeah. I guess this blogger went on to say that in the end, PolitiFact rated Kennedy's statement as false, even though the numbers that it or you dug up actually would have strengthened the case that he was making in favor of the preservation of benefits for public sector workers. Is that accurate?
Well, as I said, the number he cited, when you get down to the specific number, is off by something like 25%. Okay, so as a comparable thing for folks who may want to see it from the other side of the aisle, when during the course of the campaign, when Rebecca Clayfish was running for lieutenant governor and said that the legislature in Madison, I think I'm remembering this correctly, is that they had raised taxes last year by $5 billion, and really it was a much lower number. We rated that as false because of it just not hitting the mark. The point he was making may be supported by other numbers, certainly none that he provided us that are Wisconsin specific. Many of the ones he provided us were national numbers, so it's hard to dig into those and see, well, does that really hold true in Wisconsin? And again, we felt in this case where if on one day if you're a union leader arguing that our don't look at our benefits as being so high. You have to look at the whole package. Our salaries are low. In this case, if you pull out and say, hey, look at our salary, our pay is less than the private sector. Well, what about the other side that you asked us to look at when we were looking at the benefits? It's a package. And when we put those together, we felt like the way it was stated and presented that it just, we rated it false.
Then he goes on to say, the false rating wouldn't be so irritating if it weren't so easily manipulated for political purposes, as displayed in a column in the Journal Sentinel, I think it was on Monday, by State Representative Robin Voss. The incoming chair of the Joint Finance Committee uses the stat to bolster his argument for establishing right-to-work laws in Wisconsin. The Voss column said, recently the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's PolitiFact team reported that the American Federation Teachers President Brian Kennedy's statement that public sector workers make 8% less than those in the private sector was false. First question is, that is happening more and more, that people, your ratings are being cited in news coverage and in the arguments by the different sides, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. We certainly saw that during the campaign. You know, candidates would pick up and say, you know, this statement was rated false, or so-and-so got a pants on fire. We're watching those statements, too. A reader flagged for us Robin Voss's use of our earlier rating. We have not had a chance this week to dig into that and look at it and say, well, is that a correct, you know, phrasing of it? Because if you state something about our rating, we would hope you'd be doing that in a factual way as well. We haven't done any of these ourselves where we have directly look at a group that's picked up one of our ratings and used it in Texas at their PolitiFact operation. They did do this, I recall, and they rated a candidate, I think it was like false or barely true for the way they were stating what PolitiFact had said in an earlier rating. So that's certainly fair game. It gets to be a little hard, I think, for the readers to understand what's being evaluated then if you do too much of, you know, well, we're looking at how they used our statement, and you go around that a few times, and it's going to be very confusing. But we had a reader suggest that, and we were taking a look at that one.
You did, though, rate a statement that State Representative Robin Voss did make regarding right-to-work states having higher rates of income growth. Let's take a listen to Representative Voss.
From my perspective, I think that if you look at all of the data that has been collected, states that have non-forced compulsory union membership when you want to work somewhere have higher rates of income growth, have higher rates of manufacturing, actually over time have seen much greater increases in their standard of living.
So is that true, false, or somewhere in between?
That one came down in between. We looked at in that statement, he really highlights three different things, you know, income growth and manufacturing, and then quality of living. And as I said before, we started with the representative, and he provided us just, you know, reams of numbers. Some of them on the, you know, but the standard of living, we felt that was a little too mushy in order to really find. There's not like a here's our standard of living rating for a state. So, and he provided so many different things, it was hard to get at. We decided in the end to focus on the first statement, which was first part of the statement, which was clearest on the income benefits and income growth. He pointed us to some papers and studies which indicated that. On a sort of with the raw numbers, that appears to be true. However, things can appear to be true but be stated here where it's that the correlation to say that this is what's causing the incomes to rise. My favorite example is to use and say, well, you know, if drownings at a beach go up and so does the sale of ice cream cones, that doesn't mean that ice cream cones cause drowning. It may just mean that it's hot days and more people are at the beach. So we went to a series of five different university experts and economists around the country, and they cast some doubt on just how directly related that is. There could be many other factors, including just the tax structure in those states and a host of different things. so in the end, it kind of the issue is not nearly as clear as he presented it, and we rated his statement as half true, which is, you know, leaving out important details and taking things out of context.
We will. We're going to share some feedback we received, by the way, just at the end of this hour in our Friday feedback segment on the right to work issue. We did a big question debate on Wednesday with the two different guests debating whether Wisconsin should become a right-to-work state. Received tons of feedback on that particular hour, and we'll share some of it coming up at the end of this hour. Right now, we are talking about some of the pants on fire claims that are out there made by Wisconsin politicians and other statements that are either, you know, true or false or somewhere in between. Talking with Greg Borowski, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin, senior editor for projects and investigations for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're wondering if there is a claim out there that you want to know if it was put to the PolitiFact Truthometer. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be cloudy for the most part statewide. There is a pretty good chance of snow, most of it in far southwest Wisconsin this afternoon. Indeed, the counties in the southwest corner of the state are under a winter weather advisory for today. Highs will be in the mid to upper 20s. On Christmas Day, cloudy with a chance of lake effect snow, but other than that, clear with highs in the 20s and low 30s on Christmas Day, and pretty much the same thing on Sunday, partly to mostly cloudy with highs in the teens and 20s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. About 8 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, December the 24th, coming up after 8, it's the Week in Review. We will talk with our two guests from different political perspectives about the big political news stories of the week, including the accomplishments of the lame duck Congress, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the ratification of the START Arms Treaty. And we'll wonder if this cooperation is going to continue in 2011 or not. That's coming up in our Week in Review after 8. Right now we are talking about some of the claims being made by Wisconsin's politicians and other political figures, finding out which ones are true, which ones are false, which ones are pants on fire. And we're welcoming your examples or your questions for our guest, Greg Borowski, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin. Greg, we have an email. I'm not sure you can really answer this, but do your best. An email from Stan in Madison. What legally has Walker got the power to change regarding state workers' pensions? Can he make sweeping changes, or are there laws in place protecting the state worker? Is Scott Walker making pants on fire statements, or should state workers be running scared?
Well, I guess what I could say is we've only started to dig into some of those questions. There are a whole host of issues and things that can and can't be done. And some of what Scott Walker's talking about is looking at the underlying laws in the state that allow public employees to bargain. You know, when you're dealing with private employees, they're governed by a whole different set of laws and rights. I used to work in Michigan, and at that time, state employees were granted the right to join unions, and there was this whole battle for them. You know, the Teamsters and other the auto workers and others were coming in to try to represent core groups of state workers. So my own background suggests, just looking at this, that when they get at those underlying laws about who can bargain and on what issues and so forth, that's where what Walker is talking about and where the power of the legislature lies, more so than saying, you know, this question of can you decertify, which is really a decision for the members. You know, once you accept that they can bargain, that it's up to the members to decide what group should represent them, if any. And that's you know, so it's going to be, I think it's going to be an interesting thing to watch, but we haven't really dug into that all the way to be able to put any sort of rating on an individual statement.
And you are going to start your Walker meter in 2011.
Right, and that'll look at promises. And actually, this was one where he didn't, and he's talked about it subsequent to the campaign, but there are a host of other promises he made during the campaign, and those are the ones we want to keep an eye on as well.
Let's take a listen to State Senator Alberta Darling. You rated this recent claim of hers.
I think what we need to do is say, can we afford the benefits and salaries that we pay for our state employees? That is the question. We are in deep debt. Our spending is over the top, and we are proportionally in as much trouble as the state of California, who you hear about all the time on national news.
So the statement that you rated was that Wisconsin is proportionally in as much trouble as the state of California.
Right. We took a look at that, and her office and the senator gave us information that said, you know, look at per capita, when you look at per capita, so every individual, what that state debt or deficit is divided by the individuals, we're close. And that is true when you look at it that way, but we felt like there are other measures as well, and many other groups nationally instead look at the deficit as a proportion of the budget as a measure of just how bad off a state is. So if your budget is much, you know, it's two different ways of looking at the same sort of issue. When you look at it the second way, her numbers aren't quite as accurate as the first way. And states that some groups project out a little bit, you know, some you may have a budget problem that's easy to solve once, where other states may have a structural problem that's even worse, and it'll take years and years and just perpetuate. When you look at some of the projections going forward, California was significantly worse off than the state of Wisconsin projections. And our view was, well, you know, that's part of the mix, too, that it helps to give you a sense of the size of the hole you're in is how long and how deep it'll take to get out.
Yeah.
So we rated her statement as half true, which, again, is leaves out important details or takes things out of context.
And we have just seconds to go. Do you have a one in the paper today?
We do not. We have a national one in the paper today. We've dealt with a lot of vacations and from our staff members, and politicians are quieting down over the holidays too. So
right.
So we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus over the holidays. We'll be back on January 2nd with the Waka meter.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you.
All right. Same to you. Thank you.
Greg Borowski, editor of PolitiFact Wisconsin. Well, every Friday at this time, we share with you some of the feedback we received during the week about the issues we discussed on the program. By far, the most response we got from a program this week was following the Big Question debate on Wednesday from 7 to 8 in the morning. Every Wednesday, we pick an issue in the news that's facing the state or the nation, and we find two guests to debate the issue. This week, we picked the right to work issue. Some Republican state lawmakers are floating the idea of introducing what is called right to work legislation. It would change state law and would allow workers who work in a unionized business to not pay union dues. They could join a union if they wanted to, but they would not have to pay union dues if they don't want to. 22 other states have passed similar laws. So the big question this week was, should Wisconsin be a right-to-work state? We had a guest on from the National Right to Work Committee telling us why it would be a good idea. And we had the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO telling us why it was a bad idea. And we set up an online poll to get your views on the big question debate, as we always do. Apparently, both sides really got the word out on this one and encouraged people to vote on it. And it's quite amazing. We received thousands and thousands of votes. Looks like more than 9,300 of you said, yes, Wisconsin should become a right-to-work state. And more than 8,100 of you said no. I think we had a little ballot stuffing going on there. I shouldn't say that. You're only allowed to vote once from a certain computer, but that is just by far the most votes we've ever received in an online poll. More than 17,500 people voting in that online poll. There's another one on the website, by the way, WPR.org/Cardine. We're asking you to vote to break a tie on the two top quotes of the year. Check it out.